This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast. This is our super special Valentine's Day edition. So before we go any further, epic not safe for work or for children disclaimer, we are going to be talking about the mattress mambo, I'm sure there's another euphemism, but unfortunately I must be like an 80-year-old woman because that's the only one I can think of is mattress mambo. And of course I'm Kelly Dunlap. And Josue, do you have any euphemisms that we could use?
No. not better than mattress mambo. No. I'm good.
Have you heard of bumping spoons?
Bumping spoons? No.
Okay. I'm not sure that's a real thing or not.
I know the bump and grind, but I don't know bumping spoons.
Yeah, you do. All right. So like I said, this is our Valentine's Day episode. And what we did, I think it was 2 years ago now, we had a episode of Psych Tech called Robosexual Love. And we wanted to do it for Valentine's Day. And so
that's not what the episode was called at all.
What? Not really?
No. It was Don't Date Robots.
Oh, yes. I'm thinking of the Futurama quote.
Yeah.
Which we used in that episode.
We did. Yeah.
So we're bringing it back. And there's been some interesting developments in the world of sex and technology. And I'm very excited to dive right on in.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine from the moment we had that, I mean, from 2 years ago when we had that conversation, we've talked so much about different types of robots and AI and VR and AR. So it makes sense that revisiting this, we haven't really talked about it in that context, except for the occasional VR porn mention.
Right.
There hasn't been much talk about digital or robotic intimacy.
So for reference, we're relying on a report called the Future of Sex Report, which I'm so happy that that exists. That's such a cool name. And we'll link to it in the show notes if you want to take a look as well. But the article that we're referencing is based off of that. And okay, let's just get started. So the report starts off with this idea of remote intimacy, mm-hmm. the notion that you can be sexually or romantically intimate with somebody over distance, kind of like a long-term relationship, but the intimate style.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of just phone sex, how can technology take that to the next level? What else could you do?
Yeah, I was thinking about the history that's led to this point. And first all I could think of were old school letters, the 17 or 1800s, dost thou wearth thy knickers higher than thy should or something, something
thou
scandalous.
Thou mattress mambo with me.
Will I bump the spoons with me? So that kind of start. And then like you mentioned, phone sex, being able to talk on the telephone, talk dirty, and then texting or sexting and, Tinder. And now there's all these websites and so I just think it's really interesting that we've gotten to this point where remote intimacy is an industry. And they straight up talked about Kairu and Vibes, which I think we covered the last time we did this. So this is almost like old news.
Yeah. So these are just brands, right? These are things that have been around for years. I think the innovation we had talked about before was that essentially you could control a sex toy from, someone else could control it over the internet, right? Although they've had cables and all sorts of different things, but now we could do it from long distances.
And I need to do a shout out to whoever came up with this term, but they call it teledildonics. that just makes me giggle. So one of the advances in this area is, a remote controlled vibrator is not necessarily a new invention. But the one that I found really interesting is that they've updated it to use haptic touch technology. So basically, you can record your bump and grind, and then it will transmit that to your partner. So it is you. It is your motion, your rhythm that your partner is feeling. So just from across the distance. So I'm sure all those long distance relationship couples are very excited about this technology. So
you can record your greatest hits and then replay them over and over again. It's pretty good.
I was actually listening to NPR. I think it was NPR. And they had they were talking about this long distance kissing tech. And it's referenced in this article too. And basically there's a pad that plugs into your iPhone or your smartphone, and you kiss it like you, and then it takes the, using haptic technology, it takes the imprint and the force and the pressure and the shape, and it sends it to whoever you sent it to, and then they have the pad as well, and if they put their lips on it, then they get the same pressure and texture and thing like that.
But that sounds sweet, right? Like oh, a kiss.
There's nothing wrong with sweet.
I know. But if it were like the next level, if it were sexual, it would have to be more than just like a pucker, right? Like, have to get French.
As they pointed out in the podcast, it's going to be used for a lot more than lips. Let's just be honest. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, but like, how does that pad have a tongue? I don't know. I haven't seen pictures. I don't understand.
I don't know how the magic works. All I know is that apparently it does.
That great minds are working on this right now.
Yes. The best of our generation are fast at work. Yeah. And I think that the last thing in this part was pretty brief, because I mean, really, how much can you do remotely? But they were talking about that they're expected innovation in this area to kick off in 2018. And I thought that was really odd. Like marker, like, okay, what about it is 2018 that says, hey, let's do remote intimacy? But as always, it comes back to social and societal stuff.
Yeah.
Because apparently in 2018, there's a ruling that's going to expire that pertains to sexual communication.
Huh. Tell
and I don't know. It just says when a broad patent ruling, the transmission of sexual communication online expires. So apparently there is some kind of rule that a bunch of people got together and made about transmitting sexual content over the internet, and it's going to expire in 2018. And to the boon of remote sexual intimacy, you can hear the results of sexual intimacy in the other room. to the boon of sexual intimacy developers everywhere.
Wow. Okay. No, that's really interesting. That's homework for listeners. That's homework for me now, too.
I've set my watch to alert me in 2018.
I feel so misinformed.
It all comes down to politics.
Huh. Interesting. Very interesting. And then so I think part of the remote intimacy part, I think, and it fits into the next point on their list, which is virtual fantasy, right? I think, would it count like if you meet with somebody in a virtual world? Plus, you're using these devices. Couldn't you, in a way, right? Isn't that remote intimacy as well?
Yeah, I think that's the next step.
Yeah,
in your remote intimacy journey, maybe that's probably like the gateway drug is, just like the kissing pad or the teledildonics. And if you want to take it to the next level, you add in, you add in the virtual fantasies. And this one, again, this is something that has been around it's been around as long as there's been virtual anything. I mean, I guess you could, if you wanted to, you could project it back to cave paintings of voluptuous women and well-endowed men. Like, here's this fantasy ideal of a sexual object. But I remember reading, there's a book on my Kindle, I think it's literally just called Sex and Video Games. And it's a really, really great read into where sex fits into the online world, the digital world, and specifically the gaming world. And it talked a lot about online MUDs and MOOs, multi-user dungeons, and multi-online something. That's the MOO. I don't remember the other O.
Yeah.
Anyway, basically they were like your World of Warcraft or your StarCraft.
The precursors before they were, to MMOs.
Yeah, precursors before they were a thing. And more or less little places that people could go into private chat rooms. And as soon as there was a way to have privacy, they started sexting. The report talks about adult virtual worlds, and it gave a few examples If anybody wants to, Red Light Center and 3DX Chat are the ones with the report links to. It's like Second Life, like sexy Second Life. That's really hard to say.
Sex and Life?
Sexy Second Life. But you know, you create your avatar and there are people there. It's like if World of Warcraft became a hot and sexy, you know, single and wanting to mingles club. You know, this is where the virtual sex toys, the teledildonics, I'm just going to say that every chance I get.
I'll laugh every time.
come into play is that. So it's now you're taking the virtual, so like cybering, as it was called back in my day, of just kind of telecommunications and being able to virtually interact with other people. And now you're adding in a physical component to make it even more realistic and fulfilling, I guess. And so the line between the digital virtual intimacy and real world physical intimacy is becoming much more blurred. I'm not sure that there needs to be a line.
But when I hear virtual fantasy, I'm thinking of something like the holodeck, for example, where if two people are going into two or a whole bunch of people are going into a holodeck and having a sexual virtual fantasy, it's like, well, now we're, you know, like you're replaying, you know, an old event in history, or you're having sex in Middle Earth, or you're doing something, you know, very different than just what was it, the Mattress Mambo, right? It would be something. Again, the virtual fantasy aspect of it kind of provides another layer. Kind of that's what comes to mind when I think of like the next step in that, right? Like if we're sexting and if we're going into sexy chat rooms, what does that look like in the future? Again, like if there is a line that's blurred, maybe we're physically in a location that is creating a virtual, or we're physically in a virtual-esque environment. That makes sense? Is that a part of that according to the report?
I think you're one step ahead of the report.
Oh, you're right. Okay, no, I jumped to number four.
Do you want
to
just...
I do. I wanted to jump to number four anyway, but I didn't do it on purpose. Let's go.
So you mentioned Mattress Mambo, and then a couple of seconds later, you mentioned Lord of the Rings. And so now I have a new phrase for you.
Yes.
The Mordor Mambo.
Meh. I'll allow it.
The Middle Earth Mambo.
It's okay.
The...
We don't need more euphemism.
The Gandalf grind.
That's much better.
Yes! The Rohan Rumble.
You're on a roll. Don't
stop. The Rohan Rodeo.
Don't stop.
Leggy Legolas of lovely limbo. There we go. The Legolas limbo.
No, you ruined it. Let's go. Let's go on to number four. When I hear virtual fantasy, I'm thinking like a holodeck. But immersive entertainment, I'm thinking more of... not somewhere where you and a partner might go, but something like porn to the next level, right? Where there's porn with a rumble pack, you know, with haptic feedback. VR porn would fall under this, right? Or AR porn, right? Where all of a sudden there's, you know, porn stars are instead of you watching it on a screen, maybe they're doing it on your couch, right? Or on the floor in front of you or something like that. Like that's more... That's what I think of more as immersive entertainment. Also like choose your own sex adventures, things like that, where it's a little more interactive, but it's not so much about two people interacting. It's about an entertainment, like a viewing experience taken to the next level, like not just watching porn, but what's beyond that? How do we integrate tech into that?
And it's so much more than entertainment. I think when people think about, you know, intimacy with robots and things like that, the first thought is very hedonistic, like they're going to be porn bots and whatnot. But one thing that the Future of Sex article really does dive into is the positives behind this. So in this immersive entertainment, even though it's under that header, it references an article where a VR developer created a game about consent. And so the player... It experiences the game from the female perspective. I'm trying to think of the right way to put it. It's a way for maybe to build empathy or to awareness. So, for example, as a woman, I don't really need to go into VR to experience what it's like to be made uncomfortable by a dude at a bar. But a dude might need that. A dude might benefit from knowing what that feels like. So that's really cool. That kind of that educational component, you know, consent and not being creepy, I think is really important. And they also talk about using it as like sex ed. And there's even an 8-part series, and I get this, created by the award-winning VR porn site, Daboink VR. I'm sorry, Badoink, not Daboink. Badoink VR. And they made this VR experience with the help of a licensed sex therapist. And it's supposed to help men and women improve their sex lives. So like there's actual clinical and therapeutic implications that this technology can use. And I want to shout out to the author for really emphasizing the positive nature that this could have. It's not just all deviance. It's, you know, there's a lot of people who are lonely, and loneliness is chemically toxic, and or there's people who can't have sex, or people who have been, you know, too traumatized to trust another human being. There's people whose spouses have died. Like, there's so many different ways that I think technology could help people live happier lives, even as sex bots.
And I do want to mention that Pornhub, I think it's the number one porn site on the internet. At least that's what they say. It said in this article I read, it talked about how they just launched, this was like a week ago, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago, they launched the Pornhub Sexual Wellness Center. And it's doing kind of what you're talking about, taking advantage of a technology which is online streaming, digital distribution of pornographic content. And all of that is sex related, right? So I think it's amazing that they did this, because who is in a better position to do this, right, is to provide sex ed to people who are consuming entertainment about sex. Why not offer in the same place information about sex? So they've gone the gamut of, I think it's two categories. It's like health and sexuality. So you can learn everything from about like how to, you know, use contraceptives, what are STDs, but also questions about consent and all sorts of themes. I mean, I think they just started, so the content is limited, but I think that that's great, right? It's another example of that. It may be the lowest tech version of it. And I've seen I saw some articles online saying that we shouldn't like put Pornhub in charge of sex ed. But honestly, that's something that we're horrible about here in the United States. Many states don't have any requirement for sex ed for kids in school or high school, you know, and I think I've brought it up before. Like, I remember I had a client who I think was 17 or 18, and I had to give her the first part of the talk because she was talking about becoming sexually active, and no one had ever talked to her about that. So I had to like give some preliminary stuff and then get one of my colleagues to kind of go deep. And I was, you know, and it's something that is not uncommon. You know, I know people who have gotten pregnant because they don't know how sex works. So I don't know. I think it's fantastic that Pornhub is doing it, because really, like, that's where people are going for sex, period. And now it's not just sex entertainment, sex education also.
What's the therapist saying? Meet them where they're at.
That's right.
That's like the ultimate example of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and next up on our whirlwind tour of the future of sex, the idea of human augmentation.
Oh, yeah. I like this one because it's not just like electronic tech. It's also medical tech and advancements, yes, in medicine. Yeah.
Yeah, when I read the sentence, let's see here. The Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center have already created and implanted lab-grown vaginas into women with vaginal aplasia. Mm-hmm. How cool is that? And it talks about the very first transplanted penis, yep, implanted vagina. Like, this is so amazing. Like, medical science, this is so amazing. It could help so many people's lives.
And you could also just get an upgrade later. Because it's true, because, right, so we've had, what, breast augmentation for decades, right? And it's literally like a bag of silicone, right? But imagine now we're able to grow parts in a lab. So it's not, it may be synthetic, but it's not artificial, right? I think I'm saying that, mm-hmm, right? Right? It's still biological in nature. So, right. I mean, I didn't read this specifically, you know, I'm future forecasting, but if you can get a penis transplant and you can grow a penis in a lab, you could grow a better penis than the one you have and then get a transplant, and then therefore you have an upgrade or an augmentation.
Yes. from my understanding right now, it's for people like the person who
that's
had
far
it,
away. Yeah, it's far
he,
away.
He was had cancer.
Yeah, that example, yes.
Yep. Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's really cool that medical innovations are out there and they're making people's lives better and happier. One thing I thought was really made me stop and take pause. It talks about microchips and internet connected implants to offer incredible possibilities for people wishing to merge with machines and become sexual cyborgs. Mm-hmm. Wow. So
I'm going to go back to recording your greatest hits and playing them back again.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's going to be a thing that happens, and I will probably be on board with it too. But the idea that there could be something in my body controlling bodily functions that is also connected to the internet, and how much I know data is not safe and how encryption is not good enough. I mean, that really made me kind of stop and take pause. Can you imagine if you had some kind of microchip or technology implanted in your genital area and it got hacked and someone could just ding you whenever they wanted to oh my goodness.
So what is worse? Taking chemicals, right, to help with particular sexual dysfunctions, for example, or having something implanted in you, right? And then two, like what's a worse potential side effect? Getting hacked or like the chemical pharmaceutical side effects? They both sound pretty bad to me. The risk doesn't sound that crazy.
The real tragedy is the really terrible encryption that we have and how people don't keep their information on lockdown and use 1234 as their password. That is the real criminal here.
I use 1Password, which is an app where you keep all your passwords locked away. And I can just imagine like having to add a password for my genital implant. It's like, oh, what's the password I put on that? Oh, actually, no. This makes me think of that takes like the idea of a chastity belt to a whole other level, right?
Wow.
Like, what if a parent decides to implant their kids with something that doesn't actually allow them to have sex or produce sperm or have an erection or do all sorts of stuff? Or what if it if for a girl it will electrocute anything that goes in there? Like, there's the future.
All I can think about is the movie Clerks, and how they have that entire conversation about the vagina dentata. I guess I should explain in case you haven't seen Clerks. There's this entire conversation in the back of a fast food restaurant about whether or not there are teeth in a woman's vagina that clamp down and would bite during sexual intercourse. Apparently, this is a big urban myth. I had never heard of it till I saw Clerks.
But I was more inspired by Robin Hood Men in Tights and the chastity belt there. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, how would we, if that's the medieval version, what is the 2020 version?
Well, unfortunately, I know there's a current version right now. It's not unheard of for women to wear chastity belts that have basically spines or prongs that are slightly curved inward. So it doesn't touch the woman, it doesn't hurt the woman. But if someone was to insert their male parts, it gets hooked like a fishing hook into the gill of a fish.
Well, and no need to get more graphic than that. But that's a good point because it shows like I keep bringing up examples, right? I'm trying to be like devil's advocate, but there's a lot of good that could come from this technology. It's not just being kinky, and it's not just being overprotective helicopter parent of the future, right? While you're monitoring your kids' genitals, it could also be for protection and safety, and to put that into, you know, to put certain things under your control.
I mean, there's lots of issues. I mean, like they mentioned the report, the medical uses, the entertainment uses, the social emotional issues. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being kinky either. So, you know, go out and do your thing. And I think that's what makes me so happy. I have not stopped smiling through this entire episode because it's about making people's lives happier. And I feel that is something that doesn't get a lot of as much attention and play as it should.
Well, and it depends on who you're talking to. The biological, not only necessity, but benefits of sexual activity, right? Like, depends on who you're talking to. There's different versions of this, but it's a part of your health, you know? A healthy mm-hmm. sexual life is part of overall health.
And it's something that doesn't get talked about. It's
taboo.
I mean, when you talk, yeah, it's taboo. There's snickers. I mean, the fact that I say teledildonic, and we both giggle like school children. I just have mad respect for that. You know, it's something that I wish people were more open and willing to talk about, because it is a part.
They will in 2018.
Apparently that's when the ban gets lifted. All right. So moving on into our fifth domain, saving the best for last here. This one is robotic lovers.
I found so much information regarding this. And it was interesting because it seems to be it's the representation that we've most seen in media, in science fiction. It's the thing that most people, that I think that a lot of people are talking about. It's not uncommon to think of someone talking about or hear somebody, you know, get that conversation going into sex robots. But it's also the technology that feels like it's the farthest away in the sense of, like you said, robotic lovers, right? So I do want to make a distinction between something that has existed for a very long time, which is a sex doll, right? The idea mm-hmm. that there is something that is kind of – that can either represent parts of or an entire human body and has orifices for intercourse, right? So you could use it for that. But there's no – interaction really, right? It's one-sided. So the idea that a robotic lover, something that has artificial intelligence, something that can move and do something back, that is, it seems to be far away. I'm curious what you found.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, the fact that you would be able to create an AI that has some level of consciousness, because it has to be aware of things like emotions and feelings. Like, if you're going to have, you know, authentic sexual intercourse with a robot, it, like you said, it's got to be able to give back and figure out what you like and what you don't and respond in ways that I think is a little bit beyond where we are right now. I feel like we're pretty far away from, what was that Black Mirror episode where her husband died and then she grew a new one?
Yeah, I forget the name of that one, but... That one, yeah.
I mean, that was kind of like robotic love, except I don't think he was a robot. I don't really know where that falls. But yeah, this.
Well, I think I think that like what you're describing as like having emotions or anything like that, I think that's way, way, way farther out. Like, I think that we're even far away from just having something that can emulate the physical experience of it. Not to mention, you know, without considering the human connection piece of it, which I do want to get into, but just the act of it seems mm-hmm. like we're far away. Like, is it like robots are probably too heavy, you know, to have many different what is the word that I'm thinking of, like not positions but like different possibilities, right? And yeah, in terms of positions and things like that, and how can they do something, right? How can the robot do something that another person would? It seems to be that the mechanics of it, the electronics of it, and the AI part of it are still far away.
I would be fascinated to sit in on one of their user tests, you know, when they have to do like UX and UI for sex bots. That to me would just be fascinating.
Yeah.
To watch.
Oh, there's a show on Showtime called Masters of Sex. They have, it's like the beginning of sex research, and again, very taboo. So what they do is like they just get people to have sex in another room, and then there's these scientists just watching and like taking notes. And so I imagine it'd be something like that. Do you remember AI, the movie AI by Steven Spielberg?
I do, but I never saw it.
So I forgot the name of the actor. The adult in the movie, it doesn't matter. He's a robot sex worker, and he's like the main character in the movie. I forgot what year exactly it takes place in, But I remember that's the first time I saw a male sex robot in a movie. And there was like, it showed, you know, what that world was like.
There's a whole social commentary there. But sex with robots, our future is on its way here. And I mean, as we continue to develop technology and it gets lighter and faster, and I mean, the future is pretty much uncontained. You can do whatever you want. If you got the research dollars, go for it. And again, not that having sex is bad or anything like that. And it can be recreational entertainment, but there's also a lot of healthy medical things related, you know, whether it's helping someone who's having some kind of sexual dysfunction, whether it's somebody who's a widower and still wants that kind of physical intimacy, but maybe doesn't have the best mobility or has something holding them back. Yeah, I think I don't worry about it. As long as they're chill, you know, and you can't get pregnant by a robot. So although that would be fascinating, you know, if, for example,
our in vitro fertilization, you could do it through a robot instead of a turkey baster.
See, I just had this curious idea. So for like lesbian couples who want to have children, and I know they usually go through IVF, would a robot be an okay way to do it? Or would that still be too close to a dude? I don't know. I'm now really, really interested in figuring out how this would play out.
I think the possibilities are endless.
And I'm sure it would vary from couple to couple, but yeah, that would be...
Yeah, because when you're making that decision, right, in vitro, you have different options. And when you have a donor, when you have someone who's going to carry the baby, like there's different ways to get all of that done through the natural means and through, you know, medical means. And now we're talking about, like, you know, robotic delivery systems.
Well, they mentioned in the article, too, that the uterine implant, there's a few women who have had those who have been able to go on and have children.
Yeah.
So imagine if you were able to implant a uterus into a robot.
Yep. Yep.
So that way
no one wants to carry that thing for 9 months. So once robots start doing it, whoa.
I was actually thinking for, you know, a couple who might be infertile or struggling or it would be dangerous.
What but about yeah, a couple sure, that you know? Just doesn't want to deal with that for 9 months?
Well, I would be in that boat right now. As I like to joke with John, Grant is doing a really good job at making sure he's an only child.
Yeah.
So
getting back to what you said about, again, the report mentions robotic lovers, right? So there is now an intimacy part, a connection part. I think that there's some terms that were really interesting, like robosexual identity. Right. And so somebody who has an attraction to or a sexual preference for robots, that one was really interesting to me. And that came up in an article about someone who wants to marry a robot that she created. So she's actually like a roboticist in training, I believe. And that brings up all sorts of things, right? Like, well, you know, can you? Why would you? And I was thinking about it. And at first, you know, it's immediately like, whoa, like I can't relate to that at all. But then I started thinking, I have an affinity for technology, right? I'm not as much of a car aficionado as I used to be. But I remember like seeing a new car and just like drooling, like thinking like that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, you know, and like wanting a test drive, right? And with new technology, I mean, I do have, it's not a sexual attraction, but there's definitely, again, an affinity for it. There is an interest in it. There's something comforting for me about new technology and the idea of it. So I'm trying to relate those two things as much as possible. I don't think I'm there. I don't know if I ever would be, but it seems more possible to me. I feel like the leap to get to a point where you are actually sexually attracted to machinery or a robot that's actually human-esque or humanoid, right? I think we're going to see that more and more. I can just imagine how like cases will come up when like in terms of the marrying part because of the consent until, you know, again, there's I think there's we'll have really interesting discussions about consciousness and awareness and consent also. And I have one more thing to say, but I'm just curious what you think of that stuff or if you read anything about that.
Well, my first thought was consent. You know, yeah. You can't marry an animal because they, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them is they can't give consent. You can't marry a child because of consent issues and other issues as well. And just, I think, reiterating the idea that humans can be sexually attracted to pretty much anything.
Yeah.
In psychology, we call them paraphilias. Mm-hmm. I worked with a client a long, long time ago who was turned on by neoprene. So like the stuff that wetsuits are made out of.
Yeah.
That was something that aroused him. What turns us on based on what it is, it kind of determines whether or not we consider it to be a disorder or not. I think being attracted to a robot is not really any different than that, even if it's that extreme. Like it's like you said, we have affinity for things that like cars and whatnot. And it might not raise to the level of love, but it can. And yeah. Especially, I mean, if these robots get to be as lifelike as you know, our sci-fi predictions have foreseen, it's, I mean, we already treat them like tiny little humans anyway. You know, I apologize to Siri and she doesn't even look like anything. And she's wrong half the time. But, we still kind of, we can't help but ascribe intention and feelings to objects.
Yeah.
Or, you know, living creatures, you know, my dog or my cats or my tiny child who can't speak yet, you know, as well as inanimate objects like our cars. So I don't see it as being a stretch.
And perhaps the, you know, taking it one step further, the consent part and the ability of a robot to reciprocate the affection that you have toward it. One of the most interesting conversations I heard was by, or comments that I heard was by someone by the name of Dr. Kathleen Richardson. And she started something called the Campaign Against Sex Robots. And her argument is that sex robots are a bad thing for society because they are an extension of rape culture. Because she says that by having sex with something that is unable to say no, in people, it reduces their ability to be empathic and therefore would have a detrimental effect on society as a whole. And I thought that was really interesting. And I heard an interview where she was talking about this. And I think it's always good that when we're future forecasting that we're able to argue every single side possible, right? Especially mm-hmm. in terms of, everything, right? I think it's good to be as prepared as we can. But we don't know what the actual effects will be until something comes into the world and we start seeing it. But I thought that was, she was very passionate about this idea.
I mean, that I have a difficult time when anyone makes a statement that X will cause Y, because human beings are much too complicated. Societal rules are much too complicated to have. There are very few clear cut.
To be,
you know, smoking leads to cancer. Yes, we know that. That is true, but not for everybody.
Yeah.
And so even with things that we know are true, still sometimes don't happen. And
to be clear, I'm probably paraphrasing her. I'm pretty sure that she didn't say will, but I think she said can, right? Which is
well,
different.
Yeah, but I mean, you could say the same thing about the sex doll, the inflatable sex doll. Like,
oh, absolutely.
The idea that people can't parse between reality and non-reality when there's a clear distinction, I think, is one thing. Now, if you see something and you can't tell whether it's a human being or a robot and then you decide to go and accost it, that is, I think, a very different issue than having sex with a robot, a non-animate object incapable of giving consent. I feel like those are two very, very different things. But that's me, and I think that would be something I would need to do further informational exploration about.
Yeah, I'm just dropping bits here. I think I think that what she's saying is very interesting. And the interview I heard with her was on the RoboPsych podcast, which Dr. Guariello was here, was on the show a few months ago. And I'll actually put a link there because a lot of the stuff that we're talking about in terms of robots in particular, he's talked to a lot of the people who are in that world and who are actively researching a lot of these topics. So if you're interested in more about why you should or should not date robots, I recommend checking out the RoboPsych podcast.
Do it. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of why you may or may not want to consider dating or having intimate relations with a robot or some kind of technological proxy. It's a brave new exciting world out there on the sexual frontier. And yeah, if anybody has stories that they want to share, I would love to hear about it, especially if anybody has thoughts on the idea of whether or not to have use a robot as this implantation device for a couple. That to me is like a really fascinating idea.
I just want to be clear. You just asked listeners to send you stories about sex, right? You just solicited that from our listeners?
If they want to.
Okay.
Hey,
yeah, you know, just
if,
want to make
if
sure.
I'm talking about, if we're talking about how people should be more open and talking about sex should be more acceptable, then yes, I would love to hear about anybody's experience with these. If you've had any or if you had any thoughts, yeah, especially the kissing one. I want to know how that works. But yeah, so that's going to do it. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a wonderful Valentine's Day or Galentine's Day, whatever you want to call it. To me, I look forward to February 15th when all the chocolate goes on sale. That's my special day.
Well, happy teledildonics?
Teledildonics.
To everyone.
Yes. All right, bye everybody. Looking for more podcasts to geek out to? Check out Geek Therapy on iTunes and Facebook.